Wednesday, walk-off Wednesday, if you will. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Great to be here with you. I'm Woodsy. That's Bald Reindel, a.k.a. Adam Klug, filling in for Paulie, who's under the weather. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. What did Mama Higgins say?
So I just wanted to say, it is a privilege, and I forget this sometimes, as you wake up really early in the morning and it's dark and dragging yourself to work to do a morning show.
With me.
It's a privilege to have the opportunity to be able to connect with our audience, our tier ones out there, and hopefully when things go really well, brighten someone's day, improve someone's mood. Just, you know, you're a funny guy. We laugh a lot on this program, and we try to make it...
I'm funny like a clown?
Yeah.
Like I'm here to
exactly
amuse you?
Exactly like a clown. You are literally here to amuse me, yes.
You know, the way you tell the story.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's funny. It's funny. Well, it's how you tell the story.
What's so funny about me?
Yeah, so my mom shared this story that was passed actually along to her about a woman that my dad and brother work with at their office in Sereno Valley. Patty manages the office, has done so for a long time. Nice lady. And apparently Patty and her friend go on a regular walk through like the village of Carlsbad. Like almost every day they go and do this walk, and they pass usually the same homeless man who's lives there and
unhoused.
Unhoused.
Thank you. Jeez.
Unhoused man who lives there, and they are friendly. They chat with him every night. He seems to be a nice guy, and so they kind of formed this, you know, relationship, as it were, as they go by. And they were walking yesterday, and he is he's sitting there, and he is just laughing and laughing and laughing. And they ask, "What's so funny?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm listening to this radio show. It's Ben and Woods.
Get out of here!
It's so funny." And they just crack me up. And you know, I listen all the time. And so, whoever you are, I don't know his name, but if you are listening right now, somewhere unhoused in Carlsbad Village,
yeah,
we appreciate you. And if there's anything we can do,
please let us know. I'm dead serious about that. Please let us know that. That's very touching.
Yeah.
Very, very touching indeed.
I'm not the kind of person, of the two of us, I'm not the one who usually gets touched, but that one even got to me a little bit.
That's amazing, man. That is amazing. And yeah, if you're listening right now, please find a way to reach out through social media or something and be happy to help, man. Really, really happy to help. That's incredible. That's kind of a mind blower, actually. Also, speaking of mind blowing today, I know there's a lot of parents going through this right now. Today's my little guy's last day of kindergarten, and to say that I'm a wreck is beyond beyond words.
Big kindergarten promotion ceremony, kindergarten graduation today.
You know, now the funny thing is where he
little
goes
diplomas.
Where he goes to school. I've told the stories.
Cap and gown.
I've told the stories. They've had a party for every single thing.
And you always have to show up every single time.
And it makes me go to them. And then I stand in the corner and I watch them like do arts and crafts. And I always look at Hannah and I go,
why did we have to be here?
Why am I here? Why am I here?
But you're excited about this one. You're excited to go celebrate your son's end of kindergarten today.
There isn't one. It's basically just another day. The only thing that's they're doing differently is that they get a half day. So I said to Hannah, I go, so what's the, she goes, nothing. She goes, I'm going to go volunteer and be there and be at the end and, you know, take them home. And then they're going to go to the fair. We're going to meet them at the fair later. Today's fair day. And I said, well, there's no cap and gown or anything? She goes, no, not that I know of. I haven't heard anything. And I go, we have had a party in that classroom for every single thing. And they're not doing,
she goes,
I think it starts in like first grade.
What grades did you celebrate the end of? Because most of the time,
sixth.
Most of the time growing up, the last day of school was simply the last day of school.
Yeah.
And then you go to summer vacation. I went to all year round school. So literally, like, my last day of third grade was a Friday, and my first day of fourth grade was a Monday. You'd have like a weekend off, and you just start the next grade.
Wait, what?
I didn't have summer break.
I
went to year round school in elementary school.
Really?
Yeah. We still had vacations. They were just split up throughout the year. So you'd have one.
Was it a private school?
No, public school in Encinitas.
That's how they did it.
Yeah, you had four tracks. We had track. I was on track D. There was track A, B, C, and D. And basically, you just every 3 weeks a new track goes on vacation for 3 weeks, and then you do school for 9 weeks, and then you're off for 3 weeks, and it just rotates throughout the year. So I didn't have a summer break. I believe we had August, we had like 3 or 4 weeks off, and then November I had 3 weeks off, and February I had some time off. And then that was, instead of a full summer, it was split up throughout the year. It's actually not bad.
That's actually, I mean, for parents, it's fantastic.
Summer can be very long when, you know, you get to the end of it and it's like, how are we going to entertain people? What are we going to do? If families want to go on vacation, it's not like you have to go in the summer. They can pick different times of the year when you go on vacation. So, yeah, that was the year-round school system in the Encinitas School District
fair.
When I was growing up.
Yeah, that's fair enough. No, I just...
But we only celebrated, I think, sixth grade, and then eighth grade was my junior high middle school graduation. And
yeah.
12th grade.
I don't remember. I don't care about that. Like, I'm going to celebrate him. We're going to go out to dinner, and I'm very proud of him. He switched schools 6 weeks into kindergarten. That's a big transition, and he handled it like a boss. And I'm very, very proud of him. And he's just thrived and thriving. And he's last day of kindergarten today. I know a lot of folks are going through it right now. And I feel like I was a little bit robbed of, you know, I want to go watch him get the little diploma with the little cap and gown and all that. Have to do it at home. I guess.
Feel like the pressure starts in first grade.
I told him that. I said it really gets real.
It's a grade. Grades right in there. It's not kindergarten grade. It's just kindergarten. But once you get to first grade, you're graded. People are watching. This goes on your permanent record.
Yes. These are grades. Yes. I think so. I told him it's about to get really serious, and he's ready. He's ready for the work. But
Adam, what age? What grades are your kids in now?
Just completed fourth and first grades.
So, how's the pressure on them? The homework piling up?
No pressure. It's just crazy to think about. So in a couple months or whatever, my daughter will be going into fifth grade,
that's
which is her last year of elementary school.
Yeah, they have the sixth,
so
seventh,
year
eighth,
of elementary.
Middle school,
any,
junior high.
That's when the sixth grade is really when you probably start to see the boys, you know, the boys are more interested than they were.
I don't want to think about it.
That's happening. I'm just going to tell you, you can ignore it all you want, but it's happening right now. Like when this summer, the sixth grade is when you finally
puberty.
Yeah, puberty. But you look up and you go, I'm kind of interested in the. My friends are fine, but there's something there.
It's not everyone.
Like.
Yeah, in sixth grade, it's like some, but not others.
Yeah. 100%.
That one kid already starts to have a mustache.
He has drives already.
It's a little weird.
He's got a family at home. Yeah, there's the one kid that sprouts up over the summer, comes back full stash.
Paul Skeens was that kid.
Yeah, he's throwing 86. You know, he's throwing 86 from the mound in Little League. But shout out to my son, Bo. I love you. I'm very proud of you. And for all you parents out there going through it, it's wild, man. It does go quickly.
I did open the phone lines if people want to talk about the Padres and the Manny Machado slander. You know, why would you not want Manny in the lineup if he's available? If he's
especially
who do you want in there instead?
Especially if he's barreling baseballs. Yeah. That's what you pay him for.
833-288-0973 if you want to join us. We got Pedro calling in this morning. Good morning, Pedro. Welcome to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Good morning.
How are you doing, buddy?
First time caller, long time listener.
Good to have you, man.
Real quick, so I was there last night. It was awesome to see Kyle get that knock at the ninth inning. It was amazing.
It was such a cool moment, man. Such a cool moment. I rarely call the walk-off home run, and I told Anna he's going to end it with one swing, which was like, there's no reason that Kyle Higashioka should have hit that walk-off last night, but he did, and always feels good when you can get one right. You were there in the house. That's awesome.
Yes. I'm a season ticket holder, and I'm in section 218, man, and it was a blast. Everyone was lit. The ball was going towards us on the foul line. But I could have my eyes on it the whole time, and the whole crowd just stood on their feet. Man, it's amazing to see the support with Petco. But on the topic of Manny, I think he's like the MVP, meaning Manny's, you know, day-to-day valuable presence. You know,
Putting
the ball in play. Yeah, he's valuable presence. He's putting the ball into play, his leadership. When everyone gets a knock, gets a homer, comes across the plate, he's there to greet him along with Tatis.
100%.
He's not doing what we're used to seeing across the board when he was in Baltimore, but I think he's making his connection. He's getting in his groove right now. So hopefully after this all-star break to come or even before that, he could just be on fire for the team. And when he's on fire, it contributes and it ignites everyone else. So it's important.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And again, like, I think, yeah, he's not going to be an all-star this year. So take that time to heal up. And again, I've always admired somebody that isn't 100% and gives everything they can. I like that a lot. I think that's something that's important. But, man, Jay says he's putting the ball in play all right into double plays. I mean, again, that's, you're really minimizing, the quality of the AB. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, Eric Hosmer used to hit the ball hard and right into the ground. Manny also got two knocks last night. He almost hit one through the left fielder. Like, he's getting right.
What's the difference between a 106-mile-an-hour grounder for a double play and a 106-mile-an-hour grounder for a single?
An inch. Two.
Nothing, really.
Yeah, nothing.
I mean, nothing.
Just keep
nothing
hitting the ball hard.
Nothing you can control. At that point, it's just kind of random fate. And Manny hasn't had a lot of good luck this year. He is also tennis elbow. Surgery, hip flexor strain. He's not going to be the best version of Manny Machado this year. Probably not all year. Are we going to see the best version of Manny Machado? Have we been seeing a slowly better version of Manny Machado for the most part?
Yeah.
I think we have.
Yeah,
100%. The liners are getting harder. The balls are getting more consistently hit. The swings are getting better. And again, there's no one else. You want Tyler Wade or Donovan Solano out there
to get, you know, everyday DH?
It's just
ABs.
You don't have anyone else that you'd want out there other than Manny. Hopefully, he'll be back at third base before too long. Let's go out to Brian. You are next up here with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, fellas. How's everybody today?
Good, man.
Good. Hey, you know, Manny's got his struggles, right? As you chronicled, he's got some injuries. He's recovering from some injuries and everything. But I think the thing, and I'm self-proclaimed, I'm a Yankees fan. I am not a Padres fan. I moved here from New York State. But the Padres are going through what the Yankees went through back in the late 80s and before the Jeter and Cora Ford dynasties. They've signed all these high-priced free agents. There's no leadership on this club. There is no leadership on this club. And Manny is the senior statesman, if you will, the elder statesman. What's he doing? I don't see any leadership from him. And I know we're not in the clubhouse and we don't get to experience that piece. But guys just don't, the sense of urgency is not there. And somebody like Manny, I feel like he should be driving that. Maybe Coffee should be driving that.
I think you actually have a good point here, Brian, and thank you for the call. Manny does lead. He doesn't lead in the way that maybe Bryce Harper does or Aaron Judge does. They have different personalities. Manny leads the way his personality allows him to lead. And he leads by example, by working hard, by posting. He's not necessarily a verbal.
Isn't he, though? Didn't he just?
Well, we saw the moment when he went and talked to Adam Major, which was great. I've seen the reports for Juan Soto, where he has immediately felt more comfortable in the Yankees clubhouse than he ever did in the Padres clubhouse. Is that an indictment on maybe some of the Padres players that they maybe felt threatened a little bit by Juan Soto as opposed to welcoming Juan Soto and a credit to the Yankees? There's a possibility that that is part of the factor why Juan Soto has thrived a little bit more with the Yankees than he is with the Padres. I don't think it means Manny doesn't lead and is not a leader. It's definitely an area that he has improved on throughout his career. He's gotten better at it, I think, as the years go on. Is he the number one guy in baseball when it comes to all facets of leadership? No. Do I feel comfortable with Manny being kind of face of the franchise and the guy in the clubhouse? I do. I do, as a fan, feel like you could do a lot worse than Manny Machado as well.
Yeah, man. I have no issue with it. Somebody said, instead of piling on Manny, we need to celebrate Profar and Merrill more. Yeah, I mean, 100%. Jackson Merrill has been a revelation, and as good as he's been, he's actually been a little bit better. You know, he's been a little bit better than the numbers even lead out. He is leading all rookies with hits. He's got the most hits of any rookie, I believe, in the NL, maybe the entire MLB. Or is that right? Number one rookies, the most hits of any rookie in the NL.
Well, he certainly has gotten a lot of playing time and opportunities and hits, so it wouldn't surprise me if he has the most hits of any rookie.
Yeah, I think he does. I think that was the graphic they showed up last night. But Adam had sent us over some numbers, and AJ Cassavell had talked about it as well. As far as how unlucky he's gotten as well. And again, it's process. I'm going to ask Booney this. When you're going good and balls are falling for you, you feel like you're doing everything right. Even though you know sometimes you've got a crap swing, you didn't really get that, but you got lucky. When you're barreling baseballs and you feel like your process is right, but you're not getting results, how hard is it to just stay the course? It's happened to Tatis this year. It's happened to Jackson Merrill this year. Obviously, Tatis has broken out of it. Everything's fallen for him now. I think patience is a virtue. Patience is key for these guys as they go through their season, especially a rookie, trying to adjust, knowing that everyone's adjusting to him.
Yeah, the expected numbers, you know, the X OBA and yep. the X BBA and the X slug for Jackson Merrill, quite a bit higher. Like, his expected slugging percentage is 100 points higher than his actual slugging percentage. He has been unlucky on some of his hard hit balls to the outfield this year. He should be getting on base. He should be hitting for an even higher average. His expected batting average, over 300.
Crazy, man.
Based on the balls that he's hit. So not lucky on the BABIP. And he still put up really, really good numbers, especially for a rookie who's playing a brand new position.
Yeah, incredible.
This year.
Incredible. So, there's tons of celebration for Merrill, tons of celebration for Profar. Hope that he's okay. Have not gotten an update on his knee yet. Hopefully he's back in there today.
But, of course, the hottest player on the Padres, and we only mentioned him briefly at the beginning of the show, is Fernando Tatis Jr.
He's unreal.
Is he 100% back in your mind? We'll talk about that. Brett Boone's going to join us coming up as well. This hour on Ben Woods is brought to you by the Frozen Rope Summer Baseball League and Camps. This week, last chance to register your ball player ages 6 through 12 for the Baseball Summer League. It's going to be an awesome summer of player development and competition. Registration closes this Friday, June 14th. Go to SanDiegoFrozenRopes.com. Back after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Here's the long pause up by the chest. And the pitch to Tatis is lined sharply into right field and a base hit. Cut off in the gap by Brown. Gets it in quickly. First inning single for Fernando. No drama, no waiting around. That is a 17-game hitting streak. He becomes only the second Padre this century to have a 17-game hitting streak. It was done twice in 2006 by Adrian Gonzalez.
Hitting streaks are fascinating.
Awesome. And awesome.
Meaningless, but fascinating.
Meaningless.
Well,
so hard.
When you lose them, it's usually on something. It's weird. Like, you go 0 for 1 with 3 walks.
Yeah.
And that's the end of your hitting streak.
Or you hit 4 seeds right at somebody. Like,
it's
sometimes to keep them going, you hit a little ass-out bleeder down the line and it falls.
It doesn't feel like it should be that hard. I mean, you know, guys get 4 or 5 at-bats. You know, you bleed one in. Occasionally, you'll see those Ketel Marte 20-game hitting streaks where you go 1 for 4 every night. And it's like, no, that's not that remarkable. But then there's a guy like Tatis who's just on a tear right now and hitting the ball just with authority almost every single at-bat. And this truly is a very impressive 17-game hitting streak. I wish I could think of a way that Joe DiMaggio's streak could be threatened someday. I mean, think how far he is. 17-game hitting streak, which is the longest, as Jesse said, this century for the Padres, matching Adrian Gonzalez in 2006. He'd need to do it again, 17 more. And then again, 17 more. And then he'd still have another 5 more to go to tie DiMaggio. And a 5-game hitting streak ain't nothing. But he'd need 3 of those in a row and then some to get to the all-time record. He'd need 2 17-game hitting streaks in a row just to get to the Padres' all-time record of 34 straight by Benito Santiago in his rookie season. So they're always fascinating. I'm always cheering for them as soon as they get to like this level. But ultimately, I know it'll end for Tatis on some weird, dumb day. You know, occasionally you run in just to an ace who's absolutely hot and only gives up 2 hits in a game, and you didn't get one of them. But I have no reason to think it's going to stop this afternoon.
No.
It's Hogan Harris of the Oakland A's. I like Fernando's chances to make it 18 today.
I thought Mark Grant was going to jinx him. First at bat, he came up and Mud goes, I like his chances to keep it going tonight. I'm like, Mud, shut up. And then right to the right side. So he's locked in right now, man. He just looks ball looks like a beach ball to him, and it's so good to see him. And I'm so glad that you know, again, they decided to stick with him, Ben, and ride him out, and realize that the process was going well, and it's really paying off for him right now. I'd love to keep it going. We said it all year, man. The star's got a star, and he's one of our stars, and he has been outstanding.
Did you feel like yesterday's game was at all a breakthrough against a left-handed starter?
Not really. No, I mean,
they only scored 3 runs.
Yeah.
Could have been 0 if Sears had actually covered first base.
If he covers the bag there, they're out of that inning.
But they did get 7 hits off of him.
Yeah.
They hit some balls hard
that
didn't
maybe
fall in. I saw at least signs of, okay, you're not flailing up there against lefties.
Yeah.
He only struck out 1 batter.
I feel like that
took some walks.
I feel like that's been a theme too.
Yeah.
Not getting dominated by lefties, just not balls aren't falling for whatever reason. So, hey man, anytime we can beat a lefty, yes, that's like one more step solving them. And again, that was your first one. You're going to get 3 lefties the next 3 days, I do believe. So you're going to have to do it again. It's baseball. You get to do it again, but you're going to have to do it again today.
Not a ton of tape on today's starter. It's just his 3rd start of the season. Hogan Harris going for the A's. I don't know if Jurickson Profar will be available or not.
Yeah, I mean, think about it right now.
Might be a sugar day against a lefty to get Jurickson a day off, possibly. We'll see how he feels when he... probably get into the ballpark shortly.
Think about the guys that potentially for today's game. You do try to keep this in mind, I guess, when you're looking at it. There's going to be a few guys unavailable tonight or in today's game. You know, Profar could potentially be unavailable. You're going to have Estrada could still be ill. We haven't gotten any updates on any of these guys yet. If he's feeling any better, it can go. Suarez has pitched 2 days in a row. Morejon's thrown 2 days in a row. It could be pretty lean for our Padres today, but Michael King has done a great job, needs to continue to do a great job, and got to score some runs early off this dude. What's his name?
Hogan Harris.
I'm going to look up his...
He's got an ERA under 3, but
see,
again, it's
got
just in 2 starts this year. I think he made 6 starts last year as well, and that's the extent of his
book.
Big league career so far.
Okay. We got Brett Boone coming up next. We'll ask him all this.
All right, we'll talk to Brett Boone on a Big League Wednesday. Odyssey insider and podcaster Brett Boone will join us when we come back on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. We're talking about Jake Cronenworth during the break. And we don't give him enough credit for how smoothly he has gone from first back to second base since Xander Bogaerts got hurt. Jake's a good defender, but it's not easy to just go one day you're a first baseman every day, and the next day you're a second baseman every day. Got someone standing by who knows a thing or two about playing second base in the big leagues. We will talk with our friend Brett Boone on a Big League Wednesday right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And we are joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett, also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And I have to say, it wasn't that long ago that we had Brett in studio.
Yep.
He was kind of looking to get into doing more media. Now,
he's lapped
you can't stop him.
From
I mean,
doing
this,
media.
This week alone, he's had, I think, Mark Loretta on, David Cone, Lance Parrish, Bob Kendrick, Negro Leagues Museum. He's on today. Brett, slow down a little bit. You're making us all look bad.
Hey, we're moving and shaking, baby.
I love it, man.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Doing good, man. I was wondering if you'd had a chance to catch either of these games against the A's and see Daz Cameron, and when you watch Daz Cameron playing for the A's, does it make you feel old? Because, you know, obviously his dad, Mike Cameron, former teammate of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm seeing it's more than that. I mean, until recently, Nevin's son, Tyler, was up in the big leagues with Oakland. Now he's in AAA right now. But I see these kids. I mean, these kids are like little babies when I was a grown man, and I think I'm still a grown man, and they're grown men. Yeah, so I know now, you know, what my dad went through, and guys that played with my dad for years and years, when I got to the big leagues, they would look at me like I had 3 heads, like, I can't believe I'm pitching against you. And I said, what are you talking about? It's not that big of a deal. It's like, you don't understand, Brett. You know, I broke in with your dad, or I played with your dad for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's just making me feel old. So I get what they're it's all coming full circle now, and I know what they're talking about. It's good to see Daz up there. Daz has been through It was a first round pick years ago, and he's been man up and down. It's like that life, the life of the minor league guy that gets sent to the big league, sent back down in the minor leagues. It's disruptive, and it's exciting, but at the same time, it's a tough life. It's a tough life.
Yeah, we talked to Mark Kotze about it on Monday, Booney, and he was like, you know, there's a few guys, and he's like, look, Brent Rooker, we are an organization that had the, I guess, ability to give him the chance to slump for 40 or 50 ABs when others didn't and wouldn't and couldn't. And it's
the bright side of saying we're not very good.
Yeah, so it's the bright side of saying it. And my thought was immediately, all the guys you played with, I mean, can you think of anybody that you played with, Brett, that you said, man, this dude slipped through the cracks? Like, if somebody had picked him up and given him the chance to get, you know, slump for 40 or 50 ABs, he would have figured it out and ended up quitting or getting hurt or walking away.
Not really. Not really.
Okay.
That's the one thing about ball players, is they're resilient as all get out. I mean, they go, and you got to, for you know, most people, there's two ways you finish. You decide, I'm not good enough, it's over. Or they take the uniform away from you.
Yeah, they tell you.
More times than not, those guys, they get that uni taken away. So I haven't seen it. You know, I've seen some guys when I first signed that I thought, wow, that guy's going to be good for a long time. And just you get to the big leagues and you see a difference, deer in the headlights. And that's a part of the big leagues versus the minor leagues. That's not talked about that much. You know, they talk about the biggest jump being, well, if you can play in Double-A, that's kind of the bar. You know, if you can compete in Double-A, you got a chance to be a big leader. That is true. And Double-A is definitely a separator. But the minor leagues in general, that jump from the minor leagues to the big leagues is by far the biggest jump. It's just a speed factor. And it's that guy in the minor leagues that's, you know, that everybody talks about, the shortstop on Tucson. We got to watch him play. Well, when you get to the big leagues, even on the worst team, That shortstop in Tucson, he's at every position on the worst team in the league. That guy you're facing, that number one starter that's the best in the league, well, he's a number three or number four on most average big league teams. So the biggest jump I felt was just Triple-A to the big leagues, just from a speed standpoint. When you're bang-bang safe in Triple-A, you're bang-bang out in the big leagues, because it's just there's just a little more speed. And that's the biggest difference maker that I noticed coming up through the ranks.
As I mentioned, I had a ton of guests already on this week. Mark Loretta, who we love. He's probably listening right now.
Hi, Mark.
We're supposed to play golf with Mark at some point.
Yeah.
In Venice. We need to get that done.
To. He's really good.
He is really good.
He's a very good golfer.
He's just one of those guys. One of those guys. You know, he can play pool, probably shoots darts really well.
He's got that.
Annoyingly talented, yeah.
Right. You know that guy that just bugs you because he's got that natural golf swing? It just goes in the slot correctly.
Yep, perfect.
And he'll always say, oh, I haven't played for a couple months.
Oh.
It's everything pure.
The worst.
He's a good player.
I haven't even swung it at all. I haven't even practiced.
And then David Cohn, who we both enjoy on the broadcast. But I wanted to ask you about Lance Parrish. You had him on this week. And, you know, growing up as a Padres fan, I remember mostly Lance Parrish beating the Padres in 1984. What did you guys talk about? Did you bring up the 1984 World Series? And what was that conversation about?
Well, Lance and Arlen, his wife, are real good friends of the Boone family. His wife and my mom are probably best friends. She was in town. And Lance just came out with a book. I think it dropped yesterday. Was opening day for the book, I was talking to Arlen. I was visiting with her a couple of weeks ago, and she's like, Lance, you know, he wanted to know if you could bring him on your podcast because he's got a book launch. I said, absolutely. You know, Lance was like, not really a second father, but he's another guy that played against my dad and went on trips as families for years and years. I got a chance to be Lance's teammate actually early in my Seattle tenure, but he came. Yeah, it was all about that. It was all about, that 84 season, because that's what the book's about. It was from spring training till the final day and how it was different from the previous year. And I believe that previous year was 83. He went through the whole thing, talked about it, all the guys top to bottom. And it was fun catching up with Lance. But, yeah, that was the premise of this particular podcast, was pumping that book. And it was interesting, you know, talking from Sparky to Darrell Evans was a big off-season sign for them. He talks about the pitching staff, the guys that were going to be there weren't. You know, obviously Tiger Tram and Whitaker in the middle. And, yeah, it was pretty cool. And the thing I love, and it's become my favorite, there's a lot of nicknames we get hit with it throughout our career and teams and teammates and guys you play against. But the big wheel, yeah, which was Lance's
name. Big wheel.
That's my favorite one now, because Lance is a monster. I mean, that's a big man right there. He's always been big. He's a big weightlifter. But the big wheel and how it was coined, yeah, interesting and always fun catching up with Lance.
That's awesome. Talking to Brett Boone here on Ben and Woods this morning, and one of the ones I'm interested in going back and listening to is David Cone, because I don't think you could have found, Brett, a more old-school ball player, but that has embraced the new direction of baseball better than David Cone has. And you hear it when he's on Sunday Night Baseball. That dude is all in. I mean, he is all in on trying to figure out the best, most efficient way to pitch in the year 2024. But he was about as old-school as it got when he was with the Royals, the Yankees, the Mets coming up. He has kind of made that jump.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. He understands it. And he really studies it. He wants to know. He got into this, you know, this side of the microphone post career, and you see a lot of guys that don't embrace it. You know, I'm still going through it. I'm still learning. I'm definitely open to any of the new waves that come with the game in 2024. And I think a lot of guys, you know, especially from that era, I don't like this new game. Well, it's still baseball, and especially for someone like me, it's been in my family for so long. It's still baseball, and it's not my game anymore. I think I've said that before. It's not David Cone's game anymore. Yeah. Our game from our generation. It's not Bob Boone's game anymore. It's the kids that are playing the game currently. One day it won't be their game, and it'll be their kids' game. But in the meantime, it's like you either embrace it or this game doesn't care about you. It'll run you over and leave you in the dust. So if you want to remain a part, remain relevant, you kind of got to go with the flow. And history will judge each and every one of us in our generation and what people thought of it. But in the meantime, as ex-players, I don't want to be that get off my lawn, it was better when I played. That seems like an easy out for me. Like, give me a reason to make it better. How about that? Let's have a smarter conversation. I think David Cone's really good at that and really has embraced it and really educated to the point where he can teach other people about the nuances of the new game. Really interesting, always catching up with Coney. And he's a guy that gets to see this Yankee team on a daily basis, and I wanted to get his feel. Is it real what I'm seeing? Is it that real on the ground for you? So that's always interesting, and enjoy catching up with him.
Out of all the new rules that are in baseball now that are different from when you played, are there, because we all kind of judge them, we all kind of say, oh, well, let's see how it plays out. Are there any that you're like, God, I wish we had that when I was playing?
Well, I've like I said, I've had an open mind with all these rules. At the core, I do like to keep baseball as much as it was the way when I played. But I've been pleasantly surprised. You know, I think there's more rules. There's a few rules I don't like. The only two rules I don't like, and I understand the reason that they put them in the game, to protect the players, the amount of money that's in the game right now. If I'm an owner sitting up in the booth, I completely understand where they're coming from. But instead of talking about the ones I really like, I do like the pitch clock. I think it's been great for baseball. But basically, what's it doing? You talk to guys that played in the 70s and 80s, and they'll tell you, well, you just got back to playing it the way we did,
yes,
which is pretty accurate.
That's right.
But the game, you know, the game was going in a space where, man, we were getting a 3.5, 3.45 for a game, and it was getting a little bit out of hand. I was resistant to the pitch clock because I had that macho, no, we're baseball. We're the only sport that doesn't have a clock. Wow, has it been great and refreshing and got the game back to, maybe that's what we needed. Maybe that was the purpose of it. When they went out and made this rule, is just get the game back. The purpose of throwing over only twice to a bag is, no, not to that, that it's to encourage stealing bases again. It's encouraging playing the game the way it used to be played and moving runners and hitting sacrifice flies. So I think that's all great. Two rules I could take back, Woodsy. I don't like the protecting my second baseman at second base on a double play.
And you're a second baseman. You liked them barreling in on you, and you like to barrel in on
you. You've got to find a way to separate yourself from the pack, good to great, regular, decent player, gold glover. That's how we separate ourselves as second baseman, is being able to turn that big double play. When Kurt Gibson, from my generation's barreling in on me and wants to throw my butt in the left field, how do I turn this double play to win the game at crunch time? That's what separates the good from the great, and now you can't separate. I say it all the time. I can go get the peanut lady to turn to now, because you have to slide right into the bag. Nobody's going to get hurt. Any third baseman can bring a left fielder in. He'll turn two.
Ben Higgins out there turning two. You can do it, man. I'm telling you, they're not going to bear down on you.
As a second baseman, man, I don't want to. The other thing is, I like when we used to plow into the catcher. That's baseball.
It is.
And I understand the reason to protect him. They don't even know the rules this
day.
They
don't. Oh, last night it happened. It happened last night.
Did he give him a lane? Did he not give him a lane? The catchers are looking around like, I really don't even know the rules.
You're right.
If we could turn the clock back, give me those two back, and the rest of it's all good.
I love it.
Yeah, you can call pretty much anything you want at home plate now.
Literally anything. It does not matter.
If they actually give them the full lane, it's almost impossible to tag a guy in
Correct.
A close play anymore, because you have to give them so much room, and then they'll slide way toward the dugouts and reach their hand back, and the catcher's standing 2 feet in front of home plate. He's got it. He reaches around for the tag. The guy's nowhere near him because he had to give him a lane, but he doesn't take that lane. He takes a lane another 6 feet away and then just sneaks his pinky across the plate where there's no chance to even tag him. So it's kind of, to me, that's the dumb rule, the home plate rule. And again, I don't need to see the catcher getting completely barreled at home plate, but there's got to be a middle ground where we can understand
medium. What's
happening at home plate.
And the thing is, the rule is so damn vague that you can argue both sides and
every
come
time.
Out of there not knowing if you're right. So that's what I don't like about it. It's just not clear cut. I need a more clear cut where the layman sitting at home, anybody can go, well, he just violated the rule.
Yeah.
But you can't do that because there's nuances to it. So anyway,
good stuff this week.
Brett,
check out all of those podcasts. They're all posted. You can follow Brett Boone on social media on X at the Boone 29. He posted all there. And of course, the Odyssey podcasts, you can find them on the Odyssey app as well. Brett, appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, brother.
There he was, Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. In-center calls are presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I try to keep a good perspective. Someone commented on the tag play at home last night and said, what is the rule? And I go, as far as I can tell, the rule is, if it's a Padre doing the tagging, the runner is safe.
Yeah,
if it's a Padre doing the running, the runner is out.
If you're going to look at it and in the context of all the other ones that we've seen, he's blocking the plate. Period. The end. Can you challenge that? I think you can.
Yeah, you
I don't
can.
Know why he didn't. I don't know why he didn't. Maybe we'll ask him that Friday. And again, I do think that there is some validity to.
Are you sure you want to ask him that, cuz?
I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him. Why didn't you challenge that play?
Uh-oh.
Why not? I want to know. I want to know the reasoning behind why not challenge that. And is there validity to the fact that maybe he doesn't know, and maybe the guy watching the film has no idea if it's blocking or not? So
I want to know.
It's an interesting question.
Why he decided to run for Manny at second base but not first base?
Scoring position.
Is the answer there.
Let's break that down.
I always like those questions.
We got a Klug report.
Klug report.
Yes.
Coming up, final hour of Ben and Woods ahead on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. We're talking about Jake Cronenworth during the break. And we don't give him enough credit for how smoothly he has gone from first back to second base since Xander Bogaerts got hurt. Jake's a good defender, but it's not easy to just go one day you're a first baseman every day, and the next day you're a second baseman every day. Got someone standing by who knows a thing or two about playing second base in the big leagues. We will talk with our friend Brett Boone on a Big League Wednesday right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And we are joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Brett, Also the host of the Brett Boone podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And I have to say, it wasn't that long ago that we had Brett in studio. Yep. He was kind of looking to get into doing more media. Now,
he's lapped
you can't stop him.
From doing media.
This week alone, he's had, I think, Mark Loretta on, David Cone, Lance Parrish, Bob Kendrick, Negro Leagues Museum. He's on today. Brett, slow down a little bit. You're making us all look bad.
Hey, we're moving and shaking, baby.
I love it, man.
What's going on, guys? Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man. I was wondering if you'd had a chance to catch either of these games against the A's and see Daz Cameron, and when you watch Daz Cameron playing for the A's, does it make you feel old? Because, you know, obviously his dad, Mike Cameron, former teammate of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm seeing it's more than that. I mean, until recently, Nevin's son, Tyler, was up in the big leagues with Oakland. Now he's in AAA right now. But I see these kids. I mean, these kids are like little babies when I was a grown man, and I think I'm still a grown man, and they're grown men. Yeah, so I know now, you know, what my dad went through, and guys that played with my dad for years and years, when I got to the big leagues, they would look at me like I had three heads, like, I can't believe I'm pitching against you. And I said, what are you talking about? It's not that big of a deal. It's like, you don't understand, Brett. You know, I broke in with your dad, or I played with your dad for 10 years.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel old. So I get what they're it's all coming full circle now, and I know what they're talking about. It's good to see Daz up there. Daz has been through was a first-round pick years ago, and he's been, man, up and down. It's like that life, the life of the minor league guy that gets sent to the big league, sent back down in the minor leagues. It's disruptive, and it's exciting, but at the same time, it's a tough life. It's a tough life.
Yeah, we talked to Marcotte about it on Monday, Booney, and he was like, you know, there's a few guys, and he's like, look, Brent Rooker, we are an organization that had the, I guess, ability to give him the chance to slump for 40 or 50 ABs when others didn't and wouldn't and couldn't. And it's
the bright side of saying we're not very good.
Yeah, it's the bright side of saying it. And my thought was immediately, all the guys you played with, I mean, can you think of anybody that you played with, Brett, that you said, man, this dude slipped through the cracks? Like, if somebody had picked him up and given him the chance to get, you know, slump for 40 or 50 ABs, he would have figured it out and ended up quitting or getting hurt or walking away.
Not really.
Okay.
That's the one thing about ball players, is they're resilient as all get out. I mean, they go, and you got to, for you know, most people, there's two ways you finish. You decide, I'm not good enough, it's over. Or they take the uniform away from you.
Yeah, they tell you.
More times than not, those guys, they get that uni taken away. So I haven't seen it. You know, I've seen some guys when I first signed that I thought, wow, that guy's going to be good for a long time. And just you get to the big leagues and you see a difference deer in the headlights. And that's a part of the big leagues versus the minor leagues. That's not talked about that much. You know, they talk about the biggest jump being, well, if you can play in Double-A, that's kind of the bar. You know, if you can compete in Double-A, you got a chance to be a big leader. That is true. And Double-A is definitely a separator. But the minor leagues in general, that jump from the minor leagues to the big leagues is by far the biggest jump. It's just a speed factor. And it's that guy in the minor leagues that's, you know, that everybody talks about, the shortstop on Tucson. We got to watch him play. Well, when you get to the big leagues, even on the worst team, That shortstop in Tucson, he's at every position on the worst team in the league. That guy you're facing, that number one starter that's the best in the league, well, he's a number three or number four on most average big league teams. So the biggest jump I felt was just AAA to the big leagues, just from a speed standpoint. When you're bang-bang safe in AAA, you're bang-bang out in the big leagues, because it's just there's just a little more speed. And that's the biggest difference maker that I noticed coming up through the ranks.
As I mentioned, I had a ton of guests already on this week. Mark Loretta, who we love. He's probably listening right now.
Hi, Mark.
We're supposed to play golf with Mark at some point.
Yeah.
To be honest, we need to get that done.
I don't want to. He's really good.
He is really good.
He's a very good golfer.
He's just one of those guys. He's just one of those guys. You know, he can play pool, probably shoots darts really well.
just can do it all.
That fluid. Yeah, he's got that, you know, that
annoyingly talented, yeah.
Right. You know that guy that just bugs you because he's got that natural golf swing? It just goes in the slot correctly.
Yep. Perfect.
And he'll always say, oh, I haven't played for a couple months.
Oh.
It's everything pure.
The worst.
He's a good player.
I haven't even swung it at all. I haven't even practiced.
And then David Cone, who we both enjoy on the broadcast. But I wanted to ask you about Lance Parrish. You had him on this week. And, you know, growing up as a Padres fan, I remember mostly Lance Parrish beating the Padres in 1984. What did you guys talk about? Did you mention, did you bring up the 1984 World Series? And what was that conversation about?
Well, Lance and Arlen, his wife, are real good friends of the Boone family. His wife and my mom are probably best friends. She was in town. And Lance just came out with a book. I think it dropped yesterday. Was opening day for the book, and I was talking to Arlen. I was visiting with her a couple of weeks ago, and she's like, Lance, you know, he wanted to know if you could bring him on your podcast because he's got a book launch. I said, absolutely. You know, Lance was like, not really a second father, but he's another guy that played against my dad and went on trips as families for years and years. I got a chance to be Lance's teammate actually early in my Seattle tenure, but it was all about that. It was all about, that 84 season, because that's what the book's about. It was from spring training till the final day and how it was different from the previous year, and I believe that previous year was 83. He went through the whole thing, talked about it, all the guys top to bottom, and it was fun catching up with Lance. But yeah, that was the premise of this particular podcast, was pumping that book, and it was interesting, you know, talking from Sparky to Darrell Evans was a big off-season sign for them. He talks about the pitching staff, the guys that were going to be there weren't. You know, obviously Tiger Tram and Whitaker in the middle. And yeah, it was pretty cool. And the thing I love, and it's become my favorite, there's a lot of nicknames we get hit with throughout our career and teams and teammates and guys you play against. But the big wheel,
yeah,
which was Lance.
Big wheel.
That's my favorite one now, because Lance is a monster. I mean, that's a big man right there. He's always been big. He's a big weightlifter. But the big wheel and how it was coined, yeah, interesting and always fun catching up with Lance.
That's awesome. Talking to Brett Boone here on Ben and Woods this morning, and one of the ones I'm interested in going back and listening to is David Cone, because I don't think you could have found Brett a more old school ball player, but that has embraced the new direction of baseball better than David Cone has. And you hear it when he's on Sunday Night Baseball. That dude is all in. I mean, he is all in on trying to figure out the best, most efficient way to pitch in the year 2024. But he was about as old school as it got when he was with the Royals, the Yankees, the Mets coming up. He has kind of made that jump.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. He understands it. And he really studies it. He wants to know. He got into this, you know, this side of the microphone post career, and you see a lot of guys that don't embrace it. You know, I'm still going through it. I'm still learning. I'm definitely open to any of the new waves that come with the game in 2024. And I think a lot of guys, you know, especially from that era, I don't like this new game. Well, it's still baseball, and especially for someone like me, it's been in my family for so long. It's still baseball, and it's not my game anymore. I think I've said that before. It's not David Cone's game anymore.
Yeah.
Our game from our generation. It's not Bob Boone's game anymore. It's the kids that are playing the game currently. One day it won't be their game, and it'll be their kids' game. But in the meantime, it's like you either embrace it or this game doesn't care about you. It'll run you over and leave you in the dust. So if you want to remain a part, remain relevant, you kind of got to go with the flow. And history will judge each and every one of us in our generation and what people thought of it. But in the meantime, as ex-players, I don't want to be that get off my lawn, it was better when I played. That seems like an easy out for me. Like, give me a reason to make it better. How about that? Let's have a smarter conversation. I think David Cone's really good at that and really has embraced it and really educated to the point where he can teach other people about the nuances of the new game. Really interesting. Always catching up with Coney, and he's a guy that gets to see this Yankee team on a daily basis, and I wanted to get his feel. Is it real what I'm seeing? Is it that real on the ground for you? So that's always interesting, and enjoy catching up with him.
Out of all the new rules that are in baseball now from that are different from when you played, are there, because we all kind of judge them, we all kind of say, oh, well, let's see how it plays out. Are there any that you're like, God, I wish we had that when I was playing?
Well, I've like I said, I've had an open mind with all these rules. At the core, I do like to keep baseball as much as it was the way when I played. But I've been pleasantly surprised. You know, I think there's more rules. There's a few rules I don't like. The only two rules I don't like, and I understand the reason that they put them in the game, to protect the players, the amount of money that's in the game right now. If I'm an owner sitting up in the booth, I completely understand where they're coming from. But instead of talking about the ones I really like, I do like the pitch clock. I think it's been great for baseball. But basically, what's it doing? You talk to guys that played in the 70s and 80s, and they'll tell you, well, you just got back to playing it the way we did,
yes,
which is pretty accurate.
That's right.
But the game, you know, the game was going in a space where, man, we were getting a 3.5, 3.45 for a game, and it was getting a little bit out of hand. I was resistant to the pitch clock because I had that macho, no, we're baseball. We're the only sport that doesn't have a clock. Wow, has it been great and refreshing and got the game back to, maybe that's what we needed. Maybe that was the purpose of it. When they went out and made this rule, is just get the game back. The purpose of throwing over only twice to a bag is, no, not to that, that it's to encourage stealing bases again. It's encouraging playing the game the way it used to be played, and moving runners and hitting sacrifice flies. So I think that's all great. Two rules I could take back, Woodsy. I don't like the protecting my second baseman at second base on a double play.
And you're a second baseman. You liked them barreling in on you, and you like to barrel in on
you. You've got to find a way to separate yourself from the pack, good to great, regular, decent player, gold glover. That's how we separate ourselves as second baseman, is being able to turn that big double play. When Kurt Gibson, from my generation's barreling in on me and wants to throw my butt in the left field, how do I turn this double play to win the game at crunch time? That's what separates the good from the great. And now you can't separate. I say it all the time. I can go get the peanut lady to turn to now, because you have to slide right into the bag. Nobody's going to get hurt. Any third baseman can bring a left fielder in. He'll turn two.
Ben Higgins out there turning two. You can do it, man. I'm telling you, they're going to bear down on you.
As a second baseman, man, I don't want to. The other thing is, I like when we used to plow into the catcher. That's baseball.
It is.
And I understand the reason to protect him. They don't even know the rules this
day.
They
don't. Oh, last night it happened. It happened last night.
Did he give him a lane? Did he not give him a lane? The catchers are looking around like, I really don't even know the rules.
You're right.
If we could turn the clock back, give me those two back, and the rest of it's all good.
I love it.
Yeah, you can call pretty much anything you want at home plate now.
Literally anything. It does not matter.
If they actually give them the full lane, it's almost impossible to tag a guy in a close play anymore. Because you have to give them so much room, and then they'll slide way toward the dugouts and reach their hand back, and the catcher's standing at 2 feet in front of home plate. He's got it. He reaches around for the tag. The guy's nowhere near him because he had to give him a lane. But it's not. He doesn't take that lane. He takes a lane another 6 feet away, and then just sneaks his pinky across the plate where there's no chance to even tag him. So it's kind of, to me, that's the dumb rule, the home plate rule. And again, I don't need to see the catcher getting completely barreled at home plate, but there's got to be a middle ground where we can understand
medium. What's
happening at home plate.
And the thing is, the rule is so damn vague that you can argue both sides and
every
come
time
out of there not knowing if you're right. So that's what I don't like about it. It's just not clear cut. I need a more clear cut where the layman sitting at home, anybody can go, well, he just violated the rule.
Yeah.
But you can't do that because there's nuances to it. So anyway,
good stuff this week. Check out all of those podcasts. They're all posted. You can follow Brett Boone on social media, on X at the Boone 29. He posted all there. And of course, the Odyssey podcasts, you can find them on the Odyssey app as well. Brett, appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, brother.
There he was, Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. In-center calls are presented by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I try to keep a good perspective. Someone commented on the tag play at home last night and said, what is the rule? And I go, As far as I can tell, the rule is if it's a Padre doing the tagging, the runner is safe.
Yeah,
if it's a Padre doing the running, the runner is out.
It was, I mean, again, if you're going to look at it and in the context of all the other ones that we've seen, he's blocking the plate. Period. The end. And it did Schilt. Can you challenge that? Can Schilt? I think you can.
Yeah, you
I don't
can.
Know why he didn't. I don't know why he didn't. I maybe we'll ask him that Friday. And again, I do think that there is some validity to.
Are you sure you want to ask him that, Cuz?
I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him. Why didn't you challenge that play?
Uh-oh.
Why not? I want to know. I want to know the reasoning behind why not challenge that. And is there validity to the fact that maybe he doesn't know, and maybe the guy watching the film has no idea if it's blocking or not. So
I want to know.
It's an interesting question.
Why he decided to run for Manny at second base but not first base?
Scoring position.
Scoring position, yeah, is the answer there.
We can let's break that down.
I always like those questions.
We got a Kluge report.
Kluge report.
Yes.
Coming up, final hour of Ben and Woods ahead on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.